This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody, Jason here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Professor Brian Collins from Virginia Tech's Pamplin College of Business. We had a conversation about authenticity. Make sure to check out that part one. We're here with part two. Professor Brian, are you ready to talk about persuasion and sales process?
Absolutely. Yes.
All right, let's dive into it. For people tuning in, you can check out Brian's background and history and what he's doing with Virginia Tech. You can see it in the show notes. You can listen to part one if you haven't already. If you did, then you know where he's coming at with this. So I just want to pick up, because I'm super excited to talk about this part, where in part one, we were talking about authenticity. And I even told you this before we even hit record, is that trying to draw the line between authenticity and persuasion, sales process, the future of sales, like, it's very gray. There's no like clear boundary of what's one to another. You started talking about building trust. And one of the things that stood out to me that was fascinating was I'm thinking about you and me competing, like, you know, with the same prospect. I'm just thinking of who's going to win anyway. And you're the guest, so I'll let you win, but that's not the point. Is that, you know, you said about building trust. They're going to go with someone, you know, and using Bob Berg's term from The Go-Giver, like know, like, and trust, like when all things are equal. And so a lot of people in sales focus on that. They know that's the game, right? They know I got to get this person to like me and trust me. And so, you know, the happy hours, the schmoozing, the gifts, the just all of that kind of stuff. Even the rapport of like, oh, you like to golf? Like, let's talk about golf. And so, like, where is that line though, where people just won't tolerate an inauthentic trust building? Or, you know, what are you teaching the students about building trust in the right way? Like, what comes to mind when you think about that?
I think, from the standpoint of when I talk to the students about it, it's being genuine with what you're asking. So people can figure out real quickly and look through a smoke screen if you come in and, you know, you look around their desk and they've got a picture or something and you go, oh, hey, wow, I play golf too. And, you know, that kind of thing. That's not as genuine as if it just comes up in a conversation, or, you know, if it goes through the asking process. And I think that, you try to establish that rapport. And certainly we do that as we come in. And we talk about all sorts of things in the classroom of, you know, nonverbals, of, you know, types of communication styles. I mean, all those things that you try to mirror. And, you know, so not trying to say that we don't talk about that. But I think the real thing that comes out of it is doing your homework beforehand and looking and seeing, you know, hey, what do they comment on maybe on their LinkedIn, or what are some of the things that they follow, or some of the stuff that's out there? So it's more than, it's not that you're, and I always have to tell my students, is you're not stalking anybody, but you're stalking somebody, right? I mean, in the sense of you're trying to find out more about them in a genuine fashion. How can I, you know, how can I work with them? Do we have some things in common? And certainly that it helps to do that. You know, you mentioned gifts and things like that. I find that, especially in my career, I did very little of that. Most of the time when I was going to see, you know, an owner of a company or that kind of thing, that's what everybody did. So I kind of separated it by trying to do other stuff. You know, what are some of the other things that I can bring to the table? And typically that was either experience or knowledge or, you know, things that we've done before that might fit with them. And it's, again, asking those questions that's them. The first lesson you learn if you walk into my class the very first day, we go through the syllabus, the first thing after that is I tell them to be successful in this class. It's about them. It's not about you. And that's a huge lesson for anybody that's in sales. You have to understand the client is the one who controls a lot of the, you know, they control the budget. They control all those things. You have to convince them, right, that you're going to be the solution. Well, to do that, you got to find out about them. It's not about me coming in and saying, oh, hey, let's go to dinner. Hey, let's do that. Does that come in time? Sure. But, you know, I'll give you a really great, really quick example. I'm a story person, right? So really, really quick story for that. And one of the CEOs I used to deal with in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I would go up to see him. Fantastic guy. I mean, just great person to be around. And I remember, you know, saying, hey, you know, I'm coming from Richmond, so I'm flying, and hey, I'll bring my clubs. We'll go out and play. And he's like, Brian, I really appreciate that. I don't have time for that. That's not why I see you. You know, I don't allow you to come into my office or have a relationship with you because I want you to take me golfing. You know, I do it because of the things that you can bring to the table. So, excuse me. So I think that that's some of the things that you have to think about as you're going through and trying to drive that relationship.
I love that so much, especially what you said a few minutes ago about, you know, everyone else is bringing gifts, so you tried to do something different. I mean, it goes to my number one advice that when pushed, when someone says, how can I just get better at sales? My number one default umbrella answer is just do the opposite of what you think a salesperson should do. Like, just do the opposite of what you think you're supposed to do as a salesperson, giant air quotes. And you'll probably be more successful because you'll stand out versus everyone else. That goes from cold calling to emails to everything else. Like, just do the opposite. And I love that you said that. And even the lesson from that CEO in Minneapolis, where it's like, no, I like the value, like the golf or anything else is not important. And I think that's really key, because I see that a lot, where it's like people just trying to build that trust in the ways they think that do it instead of being valuable, right? And so how do you build that process, right? Because this is the persuasion sales process part of the conversation, where you're building value. Like, what's your favorite process, or what is it that you're teaching to the students as a kind of general framework?
I think it takes time. It's not going to be something that, I mean, there are times when you walk into a room and you walk into an office and boom, you just hit it. And it's just, it's out of the park. It's fantastic. You've got a great relationship. You know, whatever that may be, maybe you both were Hokies, maybe, you know, whatever it is. And it just, that relationship hits and it's the home run right off. More often than not, it's not that. It's a work in progress. And I think taking the time to develop that relationship, it's like any relationship you would have with anyone, a friend or family member or whatever. It takes time. You build on it. You know, you have to build up goodwill. You have to be able to understand really a lot about them. And it's that curiosity again that we talked about before of really wanting to know and understanding. And that helps you start that process of being a good relationship or in a good relationship. You know, there's just as much to me, and some people would disagree, but to me, psychology is just as huge in sales as anything else. Because you have to know how people want to be treated. You have to understand they have, you know, you're not their only issue today. They've got 5 million other things on their plate. And this 30 minutes that you're in front of them is important to you. But, you know, they could have had just a client blow up right before you walked in. They could have had, you know, something tremendous happen that was good or bad. They could be distracted. How do you continue to build that, you know, that relationship to where they trust you enough to tell you what's going on? Hey, you know, Jason, I love seeing you today. I've only got 10 minutes. I know I said it was going to be 30, but, you know, can we get down to business really quickly? I know that's not what we normally do. That comes through a trust standpoint and being able to build it. And it's just the way you act during the conversation. Again, I go back to, it's about them, asking about them, asking about how things affect them personally. All of us at our jobs, myself included, you know, if I teach classes and I get very poor reviews from my, you know, my students, my chair is going to ask me why. He's going to say, you know, hey, Brian, your reviews have gone way down. What's going on? You know, why, what's happening with this? If they stay the same, he's going to say, hey, are you happy? Are still things going on? All of that is just a process of continuing that relationship, and building trust over time. It's funny. It takes you a long time to build it. Doesn't take very long to mess it up. So you have to be careful. You know, you're all building goodwill, but it only takes one wrong step really sometimes to negate, you know, months of work. So be very careful how you go forward and be the only way for me to do that. I look at it like this. I can't lie to people because I can't remember what the lies are. The truth I can remember. Truth's really easy, right? Because yeah, it's what happened. So for me, that's kind of what I impart on my students. You know, be honest. Just, you know, if you can do something, you can. If you can't, tell them why. You know, most people will respect that rather than, worst thing you can do is promise something and then not deliver. And you're never going to get another shot.
Yeah. And you're so right about like studying psychology as something that salespeople would get value from. I know that was one of the biggest game changer for me, as being a guy with a marine biology degree that fell into sales and like didn't know what I was doing and never received any training. Like, you received a bunch of training at Robert Half. I received zero training. And just figured it out, and then was like, okay, well, I need to understand something. So like reading psychology, understanding personalities, behaviors, just like books like Sapiens, understanding where we've come as humans, like all of that is just so valuable when dealing with that human you're talking to in sales. And I love the fact that you said a little bit ago, and I was just thinking about it, like the genuine curiosity, not just asking questions to try to build a relationship, to build trust, to get someone to like you enough to buy, but like the genuine part and the authentic part of being curious and wanting to know, and then, you know, building relationships, playing the long game. And so how do you teach that to the students, right? And thinking about like, how would somebody learn that if they're in a sales role, or how would there's a sales leaders listening to this, like how they teach their salespeople? How do you teach that? How do you teach that genuine curiosity, being authentic, building trust, playing the long game, building relationships, especially if, you know, and I know your situation enough, which is I got to role play this thing and we got to get through this. But in the real world, it's much longer. Like, how do you balance that in teaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, it's tough because in the course of a semester, you have certain things you have to cover, you know, that are just items to level set, to get people to where they need to be. I'm lucky in that I teach the advanced classes. So most of my students are either juniors or seniors. At that level, they've self-selected to be salespeople, to get a sales minor. So at Virginia Tech, it's a minor or a concentration. It's not a major. So they may be getting an engineering degree in a sales, or they may be getting chemistry, or they may be getting a business degree. And that sales is an add-on, but they're self-selecting to do that because they want to go into sales. So some of that is helpful because they're already people that want to be there. So explaining to them about the process and how you become genuine and how you do that, a lot of them already have a little bit of that desire anyway, because they really are looking at this as a possible career and moving forward. But the other part is just practice. I mean, I'm very fortunate. We have a number of sponsors that, give money to our program to support us to go to the different competitions and things like that. Well, they all come into my class. So it's this week I may have a representative from Gartner or from Pepsi, or, you know, you name it on down the line. I've got 15, 20 sponsors that are, some are, huge Fortune, 50 companies. Some of them are small companies that, have 200 employees. But all of those folks come in and they'll teach as well. And they'll talk about the process, what it means to them. You know, I'll pick on Chris Corcoran from Memory Blue. He's the lead person there and founder. And, I'll have him come into class and speak. That's a powerful person to be in front of an audience for students to be able to interact with and to see. And he can drive those conversations and can say, hey, I am a CEO. I am a president. What would you ask me if you came into my office? How would you build that trust? How would you persuade me to move forward? What would make you different than somebody else? And having the ability to have other people other than just myself come in is a huge gain. That's a huge advantage because it's not just me that they're hearing from. It's my partners and my sponsors that they're hearing from. And that really drives that point home of, hey, this is how you build a relationship. And you mentioned, role play. We have role play competitions during the semester. They role play with our sponsors. They role play with me. I mean, all of that kind of stuff. So they are doing the things a normal salesperson would do. But to your point, they're 15-minute role plays. That's not normal. In the real world, you're probably not having one that short. It's probably longer than that.
Yeah. And of course, even if you're role playing with your salespeople internally with the company, right? Not in a higher ed environment. You still can only role play so much. You can only practice and scrimmage so much. Then some of it is you got to get in the game and learn kind of as you go, especially with the right amount of adult supervision. So shifting a little bit to the other side, you know, we've been talking about sales and salespeople and what we're doing or can do to build trust and the sales process. What is it that buyers want, especially from a salesperson in a sales process, not just somebody they trust, right? Like we've already checked that box, but sure. Like outside of that, like what do buyers want in a process or from a salesperson?
You know, I've owned my own company and other than the one that I had for a short time, I've owned also another company in my career. And I try to put myself back in those shoes. What did I want, you know, as the owner of a company and that kind of thing? Different personalities sometimes want different things, right? So I tended to be, you know, more of a driver when I was in that role. So what I wanted from the salesperson to come in was, tell me what you have, tell me how it can help me. And by the way, you've already been here 30 seconds and you're about ready to get kicked out because you haven't already told me, right? and not to be mean, but I was busy. So you have to recognize that. And I talked to, you know, my students about that. There are, you know, the communication styles that are out there and the way in which people want to receive information, you know, for that buyer, you have to recognize that and have to understand a little bit about how they want that to come about. Some people want to have a conversation about how are the kids and, you know, did softball go well? And, you know, how are your girls still, you know, out there being recruited or whatever, which used to be a conversation I would have with my girls. But, you know, a lot of others are not. They're not interested in that. And it's not because they don't care. And that's, I think, what you have to recognize is different people in different situations. You need to adapt to them and mirror them and understand a little bit about how they want, again, to receive that information. And I think that's how you have to understand your buyers. I don't know if that answers the question necessarily, but I was thinking, you know, from my perspective, that's kind of what we try to help them with, is recognizing those situations of maybe when you're going down the right track and maybe, you know, when you need to back up and kind of start over.
No, and I think that is valuable. It's part of, you know, what the buyers want is their own buying style. I completely agree with you. Like some rapport is okay. Some chit chat. I can usually tell when a salesperson is trying to do a bunch of it because they're just, you know, they know that they're supposed to do that, or they're trying to like complete that portion of the thing. It's like, okay, I got it. Let's just go. But I think you're right. Let me ask this though, because I think sometimes it's, in my opinion, dangerous advice on mirroring. Because let's say, for example, like you're a driver and I'm selling to you and you just want to get to the facts and I just give you the facts. Is that where is that balance with, I'm going to speak to the style that you want versus where is that detrimental? For example, if you're an analytical person and you want lots of facts and figures, and I say, okay, well, I'm supposed to mirror you. Let me give you lots of facts and figures. I promise that will lead to analysis paralysis. Like that person's just going to go into a dark hole with lots of spreadsheets and facts and figures, and it's never going to work. So where is that balance with, like, I'm going to adapt to what you're looking for. If that means you're 1,000 miles a minute, and let's just jump into the facts. And then how do I also help you move forward?
I think that that's, from my perspective and the way I used to sell, it was the beginning of the conversation where I guess I would be mirroring and going through. Mm. And then once you get to a point where you've at least got their attention and they're understanding a little bit about where you are, that's when I shift. And that's, you know, kind of what I tell the students. That's when you can now become a little more comfortable in your own skin. I talk about the analysis paralysis. It's great that you said that, because you're so right. I mean, you walk into somebody who's, you know, looking at all of this data and all these things, and they never make a decision. They never get to that because they're scared that it's not going to add up, right? They're scared that it's going to be the wrong decision, and they have to keep looking at data and keep looking at data. You as a salesperson, it's incumbent upon you to help them get past that. How do you go in and say, hey, look, I know you need all this, but you have a big problem over here and we can help you with that. And at some point you have to move past this data. So how do I get you from A to B? And you have to be almost the psychiatrist, if you will, and to help them bridge that gap and to go in. It's not that you're trying to be mean or thoughtless or anything else. You're actually doing the opposite. You're actually very concerned about where they are. You don't want to see them fail, but they can't get past that one item. So how do we move them forward? Is it something where you say, hey, look, let's take that and put that to the side. What are the other things that we have that we can work on that can get us to where we are? Now, is that thing really that important anymore? You know, whatever it could be, focus, both of you focusing on the problems rather than the things that are in between you. And I think that's kind of what negotiations taught me a lot in mergers and acquisitions. And I really bring a lot of that negotiations into the class with the salespeople of talking about how do you work through those tough problems, because you don't want to get caught exactly where you said, where you're just talking about data. Oh, can you give me the next quarter? Can you give me the next week? Can you give me the next day? Can you know at some point we need to make a decision here? And so how do I get you to that point? You make an excellent point. I think for me, it was more about, again, how do I start the conversation? How do I get people interested? And then now let's move on to the other things. And I may present it a little different way. Maybe I am a little faster with drivers, or maybe I am a little bit more detailed with analyticals, or, you know, maybe I do talk a little bit more about family with an amiable or whatever, but I'm still pushing them gently, sometimes forcefully, to that goal of how do I help your business? Right. I mean, ultimately, think about it. We're salespeople. What's the one thing we don't have a lot of? That's time. And we don't have the time to necessarily spend years on a client trying to get them through something when we could reduce that time by showing them some other ways to do it. So that's kind of incumbent upon you as a salesperson and as a student in our class. What's that secret sauce that gets you through that? And it's going to change for each person that you're dealing with. So, if you're used to it, don't worry. It'll change tomorrow. We'll have something new. So,
you're right about the time thing. I mean, here's the biggest thing is that if what you're selling is actually valuable, because there's a lot of not valuable stuff out there that people are in love with selling and they think it's valuable, but it's really not, or not at scale. But if what you're selling is actually valuable, then the right people need it. Now, sometimes there's timing, sometimes there's budget, sometimes you got to make sure they're going to succeed so that maybe they have to wait till next quarter. But like if they need it now, right? Like if you need surgery, then you probably need the surgery now, not after you think about it for the next 12 months, right? Like that's usually not right. A thing. And so like that urgency, I agree with, right? Obviously in the best interest of what is actually valuable to them, but that urgency should be there. And I love all that you added. Like I figured that's what you were going to say, but that's why I asked it, because I still see so often where the standard surface level advice is to make sure you mirror. If you want to be good at sales and persuasion and influence and negotiations, mirror them, right? And it's like, no, maybe meet them where they're at. And then I love what you said, which is in the beginning, somebody's a driver and they want to go, go, go. That's great. Let's go. And then some point I'm going to have to take over as the sales professional with the mission of where we want to get to. And I might have to do things a little bit different. Same thing with the amiable, the analytical person. Like you have to do it different. And I love that. And I think that's perfect advice, because there's so many people out there who just try to mirror. And then you have two people going nowhere in whatever bucket that is. Like, I promise. Like it's not going to happen. If you're amiable and your person's amiable that you're talking to, everyone's agreeable and going nowhere. Like no one's asking anybody anything and no one's confronting anybody about anything. And I promise you'll have really good Facebook friends, but that's about it when it's all over. So with what you said, because, you know, one of the things that I know is that we even talked about this, is buyers have their research. Buyers can do their research. They have access to as much information as salespeople. They probably use it better than salespeople do, because salespeople generally can get focused on what they know and what they want to deliver. What are they looking for from that salesperson? I mean, you were talking about like the relationship building, the trust, you know, speaking to the different personalities, but where is that intersection of what they still need a salesperson for versus, you know, what they can find themselves?
So if you think about B2B sales, a lot of times it's a larger expense that maybe they're looking at. If I'm somewhere and I'm buying something, you know, that's small, I'm probably just going to go buy it. I'm going to go to Amazon and type it in and go. So, you know, when you start thinking about it, there's still a little bit of, even though they may have all the information at their fingertips, there's still a little bit of that questioning that they have. There's some things that are making them unsure to make that buying decision. And I think as sales professionals, we have to help them with that. We have to kind of explain, you know, hey, I know you probably see that it does this and this, but here's what it means to your company. Here's how that implementation can affect you going forward. You know, where are you losing money now? Where can this supplement that and maybe keep you from losing money or help you to make more in addition to that? And I think it becomes a point where as you're, you know, talking through that process with the buyer, you really are becoming more of a consultant than you are necessarily even a salesperson. Are we selling? Yes. And don't get me wrong. At the end of the day, we want to sell our service or our product and we want to make money. We all understand that. But we also too want to make things better for our clients. And by having those conversations and assuring that buyer that the conversations that they're having with us are unique, genuine, authentic, they're getting a straight answer, they're going to be more comfortable making that decision and helping their business. You mentioned, you know, not maybe waiting till the next quarter to make that decision. You know, that's okay. It's when it's 3 years from now is when it's not okay. And that's where you've wasted, even if you make that sale, unless it's a multi-billion dollar sale, you probably could have spent your time elsewhere doing things that were going to be just as equal and have clients that you could have built that would probably be happier in what their experience was. So I think that that's really, we are there to be their conscience. We're there to be their help. We're there to be the person they bounce ideas off of to give them, you know, that feeling of assurance that they're making a decision. Because a lot of times in the companies that I've seen, especially as they get bigger, it's not just a one person decision. It's a team decision. And when you're that one person and you're standing up, you have a lot of opportunity to lose face. And face saving is a huge issue that you have to overcome in sales and negotiation. You know, people will not make a decision just because they don't want to look bad, because they don't want to make the wrong decision. So how do we help them in that team sales environment to be able to say, yes, I'm the advisor, trusted advisor for this, or I'm the one pushing this through. I know I'm not the one driving all the budget, but I believe we should be at that level and we should make this decision. To be able to get them to do that, you as a salesperson, it's incumbent upon you to help them have that ammunition, if you will, to make that decision.
I think that's great. And that's where I think a lot of salespeople can shift their value from thinking that it's all about the facts and the features and the data and the kind of things that somebody could look up online or have probably already done the research about your product or, you know, that whole service offering versus, like you're saying, the consultative approach and also that guide that's going to help them. I love what you said. I was just making a note of that, like, you know, to be their conscious, because you're right. Like most people in B2B sales knows they're selling to somebody who's then got to sell this to other people, right? The other people involved, whether they're making the decisions with them or this one person needs to make the decision and can, but then they're going to have to justify it to everybody and get them on board, right? Like they may not be their approval, but they're going to need their approval, right? After the fact. And so I love that where it's like, I've seen that so many times where that person is really by themselves. They want something and they want to get everyone else on board. And they need that, they need that person on their shoulder, helping them and guiding them through the process and giving them all the, you know, ammo that they need to make this change internally. Like, I love that. I think that's a great way to put that. I'm also excited for our next section. We're going to talk about the future of sales. And I know there's some fun topics that's going to take this and continue on with it. So I'm looking forward to that. As we wrap this one up, Brian, for people who want to connect with you, they can do it on LinkedIn. They can find you on there, Brian Collins. And again, I mentioned the first part, I love it. Brian Collins Sales is your you know, / LinkedIn on there. And it'll be in the show notes. Also the Pamplin School of Business link will be in the show notes, or you can Google it, or the short version of it is marketing.pamplin.vt.edu. But again, it's probably easier to Google it these days. Professor Brian, thanks for being here, talking about sales process. Cannot wait for the next part. We're going to dive into the future of sales, but I appreciate you being here and all of this time and everything that you shared about helping the future salespeople in a way that's more effective. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jason. I really appreciate it.
And for everyone tuning in, as always, thank you for being here, being a part of this mission to shift the way sales is done. Get it from not being that transactional, dirty feeling experience that people have or have come to expect, but something where actually looking forward to getting help from a sales professional and wanting help as we move from the authenticity to the persuasion and then the future sales next, where we're going to talk about some things that will really help in that mode of what salespeople could and should be doing and what buyers want from them. Appreciate you being here. Hopefully this was valuable to you in your sales journey, your sales process. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.